she had said that they, you know, they also, I guess she was more pregnant than people thought she was, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then, so then they, and then they thought they better not, she was like, you know, in a more of a isolated area with being pregnant, and her friend was with her, so then finally she escorted her to 95th, you know, and then so that's, she ended up delivering there.
Uh-huh.
Hmm. But we didn't brought, you know, nobody, you know, wouldn't be, we didn't make a big noise about it, you know.
Uh-huh. But she did then have to be processed out.
Yeah, well, actually what happened, yeah, she was, you know, then she was evac'd with
uh-huh.
the baby
uh-huh.
to Letterman and from there.
Uh-huh.
But she, you know, was going to keep the baby, you know, because her boyfriend was there in stateside.
Uh-huh. Huh. Wow.
But, you know, not, you know, this isn't, you know, I mean, I imagine that has happened with the other wars and two,
uh-huh.
you know, but,
uh-huh.
but it didn't, I don't think they're really, you know, if we ever took, I don't think nobody ever kept statistics, you know.
Uh-huh, right.
Yeah, so that, you know, but I would think it still was at a minimum, you know.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Hmm. Let's see, and so you had all these different kind of positions at the hospital that you worked. I guess, how busy was Da Nang? You know, was it busy with casualties? Did you have a lot of casualties, or?
We were, you know, regardless, you know, it was called a back hospital, but we had direct casualties come directly there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then, of course, also we had to deal with also was the civilian injuries that might be nearby and so forth.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so the thing, yeah, and then, of course, see, also we had a lot of medical conditions, you know, hepatitis, so forth, that there were, that those units, you know, were, but we probably, like I said, I think during that period, there was a little bit more of a lull, but I know that, you know, our intensive care units, you know, when I think in the operating room, was they were kept busy, you know,
uh-huh.
at spurts, and then there'd be a lull, you know,
uh-huh.
but I can remember, you know, making rounds and knowing, you know, going to the surgical intensive care, and here it would be a patient without legs and arms.
Uh-huh.
And of course, you know, then somehow they, I think, like now what's happening in Iraq, they can write, they have these catch units right there, you know, and start, you know, with Medicaid, you know, IVs and so forth.
Uh-huh.
You know, that although because of the helicopters in Vietnam, you know, that was better than Korea in World War II,
uh-huh.
you know, saving the casualties.
Uh-huh. Huh.
Yeah, like for instance, you know, I remember, you know, when I was on my, as a supervisor, and I went down, we had a call that we got incoming, and came these two young fellows, they were MPs, and snipers had shot them. They came in, they were evac in those baskets, with they even had twigs around them when they were put in the helicopter and put them in those baskets and brought them in like that, you know.
Uh-huh.
And one fellow, he was really bleeding and so forth. So they were, I was, you know, I usually go down, would go down when there's some of these come down. But then I realized then there was this other one, and this young fellow, you wouldn't look at him, there wasn't hardly anything. He had like fresh fatigues on and so forth. And Sniper had had a shot and went right through. He missed his trachea,
uh-huh.
kind of like in his neck area. And so an ENT man and I, you know, we're trying to figure out what we're doing there. And I realized, you know, I was afraid, you know, suctioning. I thought, oh, that freak's going to, he's going to swell, you know, he's going to aspirate here.
Uh-huh.
And so then, of course, the ENT fellow realized that he needed help. So we were able to get the anesthesia in there so we can get to put the trach tube in and so forth. And this fellow, he was very calm and cool. And I remember taking his cross. He was a Hispanic young fellow.
Uh-huh.
And his cross, he had his cross necklace on. And it was on the way. So I took it off him and I said, and I put it in my pocket. And I said, I'll take care of this for you right now, but we need to get this done. So before we was taken into surgery, you know, and
uh-huh.
we were able to do some repair and so forth. So I was kind of worried and wondered about him. But he was wondering, how's his friend? And I kind of looked, would go over there, and I know they were, you know, I think he was bleeding quite a bit, and he had, I think they got him into surgery, but I'm not sure, I think, how much injury he had, but I think he made it, you know.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't, you know, I can't remember, everything went past so fast. But anyway, so next morning, I went to see this young fellow, and there he was, sitting up in bed, and he had his suction, and he was suctioning himself, you know, because he was kind of gurgling a little bit, and he put that in it, and I'm just amazed, you know, but of course, the fellows in those units and the staff, and they teach them right away how to help with themselves and so forth,
uh-huh.
but that's all he had, you know, just was a sniper gunshot that went, just missed his trait, you know,
mm-hmm.
but then you see, it was really hard, you know, he was kind of skinny kid, and I thought, oh God, and I was trying to suction, you know, and I thought, oh God, he's going to die on me, he's going to stab that, but he did, you know, I mean, was able to get the anesthesia people and got him,
uh-huh.
but anyways, so when I went, you know, to give him that, you know, I said, isn't that, it's just amazing, but these two fellas, but I know the his fellow, I think he did not die, the other one, but he was really got shot up quite a bit, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yet this other, and I guess he must kind of feeling guilty, but how he missed, you know, I mean, maybe, you know, it all happened so fast, I guess. You know.
Uh-huh. Hmm.
Yeah, so.
Hmm. Do you tend to remember a lot of the
yeah,
the patients?
You know, talking about, I might sort of tell this one, because those are the other case I'll never forget. Again, it came that they were bringing in a body in my supervision room, and he was in that body bag, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they, you know, he needed to be kind of assessed, you know. And so there's three of us, and just looking at him, you know, mostly, well, they had already done something before I got down there, and they had zipped him up, you know. And I said, well, oh God. And they didn't have anything on him. He didn't have any, really, I guess he had his ID, but his billfold, I looked at that, it was nothing in there, hardly. You know, mostly you'll find fellows that have pictures of family and stuff. There wasn't.
Uh-huh.
And he was an MP that found that he had committed suicide. They found it, he was on, you know, they do those 4-hour shifts.
Uh-huh.
So apparently, then he had taken his gun and he shot himself.
Uh-huh.
You know, and mostly in the head, you know, so. And then I looked at him, and then, you know, I said, oh, dear. And I said, you know, he was like 17 years old. And his mouth was kind of open, and his whole teeth were all decayed. And I thought, oh, where did he come from?
Uh-huh.
So he probably, you know, was off the street. Well, however, whatever happened, he wasn't seen. But it was kind of sad to see that he didn't look like he had anybody.
Uh-huh.
When I was looking at some of his records, you know, that
uh-huh.
it wasn't too much in it. And I guess that was his only way of, you know, getting away from the war. But
uh-huh.
And that he did. He ended up shooting himself.
Uh-huh.
That kind of, you know, it was kind of sad. And, I had to kind of look. I had to see who he was.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Let's see. I just thought of something and I just forgot what I was going to ask you. let's see, so you came home then in November of 71,
uh-huh.
right? And had your, what did you think about the war in general? I mean, did your opinion of the war change after seeing things like that? Or?
Yeah, well, the thing is, it's you know, I'm much more aware what's going here. So I don't know what was going on, because they had quite a bit of TV news over here, I think, about the Vietnam and so forth. But I guess, you know, the thing is, what ended up happening, being that we sort of lost it, whatever happened, we had to get out, and, you know, that was, I said, well, what was this really kind of worth, you know? And so I wasn't really politically involved, you know, like, I mean, that knowledgeable. I was there to do the job, you know, and we're doing the best we could and so forth, and we were involved with all this stuff that I'm listening to here now mm-hmm. with this stuff, you know,
mm-hmm.
and so forth. So,
uh-huh.
but anyway, so of course you see, then I was kind of busy with my own life because what was happening. That was over the holidays, November and December, and then I had to get ready, and I went on to my, you know, I went then reported in January. I went to Texas Women's University for my prepare for my master's program. You know, I
mm-hmm.
had to find an apartment and things like that. And,
mm-hmm. And what was it like going back to school after being in the war? Was there a lot of?
Well, I guess I didn't adjust to
terminology or whatever.
He said it took it. You know, so this will pass too, or well, because I was anxious about my school, you know, because
mm-hmm.
I went there and I wanted to do decently, you know, and so
mm-hmm.
forth. So, you know, and I had to take a course in statistics, and so I think I didn't have anything to worry about but myself, and I didn't worry about anybody else.
And what made you decide to make the military a career?
Oh, I did that right away.
Uh-huh. Before, when you joined up, that was already set in stone.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
When I joined, you know, I knew I was going to make it a career.
Uh-huh. Did you ever, you know, in the years after, have any problems with nightmares or anything like that?
No. Well, I used to hate it to hear helicopters, because
uh-huh.
all I could think is how many incoming
uh-huh.
kind of patients are coming in and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that, so that's what maybe I could say that. You know, when I was at school, I could hear helicopters, and they would kind of get chilled up a little bit, you know.
Uh-huh.
But otherwise, I had to get busy being a student. That was my worry.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't go through all that. And I think because I had experienced nursing and had different things, you know, like when I was working at 97th, you know, and that, you know, taking care of all these patients and OSP and
uh-huh.
so forth. That I had the nursing experience.
Uh-huh.
And I've been adjusting forever, you know, for different things, you know, so.
Uh-huh.
So I just hear that some people are still really here even. I'm still quite upset. They haven't even gone to the Vietnam Wall, you know.
Uh-huh.
And of course I've been doing all this volunteer stuff with the Vietnam Women's Memorial.
Uh-huh.
So forth.
When did you get involved with the project? Was it when they were raising money to build the memorial?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I was here when, you know, when Diane Evans, Carlson Evans, was, you know,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it took us 10 years to get that. You
know, uh-huh.
She, you know, here she was, a Vietnam veteran, you know, she's been there as a young nurse. And then, remember, she came here,
uh-huh.
came to the wall that time. And she did have post-trauma, you know,
uh-huh.
so she had gone, you know, to counseling and stuff like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said, well, why don't they have the men's statue? Why don't we have a women's statue nearby, you know, the wall?
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, those names of women were on the wall, but then didn't have anything. So she had to go through a lot, and there, you know, she had a group that she worked with and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then who was always such an antagonist is that Jay Schwartz, who is responsible for the wall, the memorial wall itself,
mm-hmm.
and those men, you know, he didn't like the idea of having a separate women's one. So he hasn't always been that supportive of what's been going on.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And what kinds of things did you do with the foundation? Was it raising money or?
What?
Your involvement with the Vietnam Women's Foundation?
No, I did not. I went to these programs, and then I sell our displays. We have T-shirts and
uh-huh.
different things like that, and books and so forth.
Uh-huh.
So I would go and get people to help me. I go to the PXs, and then some of these nursing conferences we are still doing it. You know, when we have
uh-huh.
because we have finally paid up the statue,
mm-hmm.
I mean the memorial,
mm-hmm.
so now it's mostly is keeping the people educated about it, so we're kind of maintaining that part, you know, so
mm-hmm.
so there's literature that we give out to people and stuff, you know, to, because you have all these memorials in D.C. Have you been here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Have you been to all these statues?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So... So anyway, so you still have to kind of help with the maintenance, although the park service does take care of things, you know. But then the idea is people want to know about the memorial. So it's mostly like now is everything is done more by through our website. And then, for instance, there is a board, and we don't have, we used to have an office here in D.C., and we don't. We're just using space for letters, for mail to come in, and it's in our lawyer's office, who's a kind of a volunteer lawyer for us. And so anyways, like now, when Diane Carlson herself, who is the president and the founder, and she's always active. Comes here twice a year for Veterans Day and then Memorial Day. She's living in Montana. She came from Vietnam. She came home and got out, but then rejoined, and then she was down at Brooke Army Medical Center there in San Antonio, and that's where she met her husband. So he was en route supposedly to Vietnam, but the war stopped, so then he didn't. So they stayed there, and then they finally both got out together, and they lived in Minnesota. And that's when she started kind of needing that, went on to counseling, and then realized what she wanted to do with this. So this has been her life for, and they have four kids. It's amazing what she's been able to do. Anyway, so she lives in Montana. And then Jane Carlson, who was a Vietnamese, and she's down in Santa Fe, and then who is the treasurer of the sec. Yeah, the secretary, the secretary lives someplace near here, and the treasurer is in New York, so they get together by telephone. I mean, for the conferences, there's telephone conferences, and then they get together those 2 days during those events. But so then they need people like me to help, you know, display some of this stuff. Although we have a website that people can... We have a marketplace, so people can look and see what we have and so forth. And so now with CALPING also is that, did you have a chance to go to the AMAT Museum down there, San Antonio?
No, I didn't.
Because that's where now they are selling some of our stuff, Vietnam stuff, too.
Do you read a lot of those books that were written by the nurses?
Yeah, I do.
Which ones have you read?
Well, actually, right now, I can't think of the title, but although the two titles, I know we've gotten kind of involved with World War II stuff, you know, that's the history. So then, of course, there is a book called If I Perish, that's about World War II. And then there's another one that has to do with a gal she's from Minnesota, and then she had written a book, you know. But right now, I can't think of, I've read some of those little titles, you know, but there's one, a little book on Sharon Lane.
Did you read Linda Vander's Home Before Morning?
No, you know what? I've never read that.
Do you remember all of the controversy about that?
Yeah.
What do you think that the argument was about over her
book?
Well,
no, the thing is well, I think the thing is also, she was one of, in a sense, kind of one of the problem children. There were plenty of things that she was doing. She was into drugs and stuff like that. So,
And so you think that was the argument, or that's what people argued about?
You know, I hate to tell you, I guess I didn't pay too much attention, because I know that who her chief nurse was and so forth and things, you know. And of course, the thing is supposedly she was telling about a lot of stuff, and that could be kind of generalized, you know, I mean, that a lot of the activity, sexual activity, whatever. I never really read that. I just heard different things, so I have never read that book. And I really should, I guess.
Yeah, I've been reading a lot about, you know, her book and the arguments, and there was a group that was founded in opposition to it and things, and so I just wondered, if you knew anything about it or what you thought about it.
Well, I can remember that there was this, that, you know, there was even televised, you know, kind of dialogue regarding it and so forth. And then, actually, she, I don't know where she was at that time, but so I really, I can't really say too much more, because I don't know, I heard all this, and I just sort of, I just let it go by.
Are you glad that you served in Vietnam?
Oh, yeah, I would have felt like because I made Army career, I think I would have felt like, you know, I felt like it was my responsibility, and that's part of my job, and I think I would have regretted it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I have that feeling among some of the nurses who couldn't go over there that they felt like they missed out on something,
mm-hmm.
you know, some of my peers.
Mm-hmm.
But they were teaching in the RAIN program, and some of them, you know, they needed people to teach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there was no opportune time.
Were there any regrets that you had about any of your Army career?
Oh, never. No. Oh, gosh. I think that's why.
I wouldn't change anything.
I'm a very proud member, you know. I was all, you know, and sometimes I get a little bit defensive when I hear all this stuff. And I do, okay, even with my own relatives, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, like with some of the singles, I mean, the fellows, especially when they, during that, when I was recruiting, and they wouldn't, well, no, they're not going to go in the military. And I think I even hear some of them say that, you know, when they're in the talking, they feel like they listen to some veterans. I think they feel like, I really miss something. I think I miss something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I really feel like, too, that, you know, as a large government, a large country that we have, it is disposed, you know, when you think of it, there are people, you know, I think everyone should have a chance to have some sort of service time.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you think of it, you know, like even now with President Bush, you know, but people go into the National Guard and so forth. And it's amazing to know, when you look at it, how many African Americans are on active duty.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they went to learn, you know, to be more into, you know, so here they're the ones, and then some of these other people are getting killed, while the other people are enjoying their freedom, you know, and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sometimes I feel like, you know, like in some of the, you know, other countries, they do. They have kind of options, you know, I mean, they have, what do they call it? I forgot the term now. But that's a requirement that they
mm-hmm.
could serve their maybe only for a year, whatever it is. I'm thinking about Finland and some
mm-hmm.
of those other,
mm-hmm.
and I think even Germany, you know,
mm-hmm.
that they serve their, do some military time,
uh-huh.
be prepared, you know, if there's something.
Uh-huh.
So it isn't just, and then, like now, we don't have the draft.
Uh-huh.
And so, and people are recruited, when you really look at, many of them do come in because it gives them an education, you know, I mean, there is that scholarship program
mm-hmm.
that are helping and so forth. But then many people, you know, like some of the youngsters, they really grow up.
Uh-huh.
And I think with the medics, you know, you have a little different, that people are very motivated in a sense, you know, and I think that they learn a trade, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they're wanting to advance and so forth, and
mm-hmm.
and like ROTC is really helping, and Major Scott is a ROTC graduate.
Uh-huh.
So you haven't seen her.
Uh-huh.
And she's true Army.
Yeah. Well, great. I think we've pretty much covered,
yeah.
you know, everything. So you retired in 80.
How many telephone bills are yours?
Oh, no, don't worry about it. We found a cheap company, so. So you retired in 87, right?
Yes.
Okay, but you've been pretty busy since you retired.
Yeah, when I did retire, I was thinking of going with JCH, Joint Commission for Accreditation.
Mm-hmm.
They needed psychiatric nurse. So I did work, when I got retired, I took a year off, and then I worked at Psychiatric Institute of Montgomery County because I needed to see what was going on in the civilian world and so forth and
mm-hmm.
and so forth. And then after I started working, I decided, no, I don't think I want to go with JCH because that's travel, and you have to face a lot of hostile, you know, when you do inspections.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Nobody likes inspectors.
Yeah, Joint Commission for Accreditation, you know, So I decided, no. So then I did work part-time, and then I put on the PRN. Pretty soon they wanted me to come all the time, so then I quit. So I've been kind of volunteering things, and then, like, that's why, like, I've been doing now. Everybody's wondering how long I'm going to do this. But I do go weekly to the historic, Army Nurse Corps Historian Office.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that's where we talked that.
Yeah.
We were talking with Major Scott.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I bet that's a lot of fun working there and seeing all of the files and knowing what's going on.
Yeah. So the thing is that somehow I can't, my filing is backlogged, you know, because usually we get trying to search something else and so forth.
Uh-huh.
And I know, I feel like if I should go a few more days and then try to get that caught up, but I don't know what I'm going to do. Anyways.
Great. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me again. if I think of anything, you know, in specifics or whatever, if I get confused about something, I'll let you know.
And then, you know, like I was thinking that, you know, when we were talking about Vietnam, yeah, have you gotten a brochure? Have we got an updated brochure and then the website?
I've seen the website, and I've seen some of the brochures, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, there's
which one
that's updated now, you know. It was updated. See, we celebrated our 10th year anniversary last fall. It's just a little brochure that just talks about, it should be in the website, too.
Yeah, well, I'll probably have to come back to D.C. again sometime soon for more research, so I'll... I might even see you at the archives if I'm there on a Thursday or something. But
we could have, like, Major Scott, you and I, we go for lunch or something.
Yeah, great. Okay. Well, I'll stop the tape now.